You know, you kind of stole my intro to you. I don't know if you guys know this, but Miles has been gone a lot. And the last trip that he went on, first off, he went on one trip without me, and I felt kind of like, I have this thing about fear of missing out. It's a legit thing. But the last trip that he went on, he went to Ashland, and he is almost the right majestic right reverend, the actual ordained kind. So just in a couple weeks, we'll have a little pomp and circumstance, and we'll just see how that goes. So, like Miles said, my name is Jesse. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm going to talk to you all about joy. Woo! Yeah, absolutely. Now, when Miles said, hey, I'm going to be gone for a long time, I'm not going to be here, he was like, can you preach on joy? And at first, I was like, yeah, sure, why not? That sounds like a great idea. Do I know anything about joy? But after thinking about it, I was like, I think Jesus has kind of done some work in my life to kind of help reveal some ways that I can find joy. And my hope for today is that we could begin to redefine where we find joy in our everyday life. Like I mentioned before, again, I didn't get a chance to look at the new homework sheets, but the first right off the gate was like, listen to worship music that you don't already like, and immediately the inner cynic inside of me goes, oh, I'm not doing that. There's no way Miles is going to make me listen to Shane and Shane on repeat for the next several weeks. But for me, finding joy is not really a habit that I currently have very much in my life right now. But one of the things is for sure, and it's kind of interesting as we talk about joy, as I've been processing it the last couple weeks, there's been something kind of stirring in my soul, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but and maybe you all could like relate to this, that there are things in my life that I used to find joyful, but as I get older, I go, man, those things don't really bring about much fruit in my life anymore. More often than not, if you know me and my personality, I tend to be like the crazy dude at parties. You know, I'm loud. I have like an obnoxious laugh that is also both endearing at the exact same time. I got complimented on it the other day, which I was like, oh, cool. All right. I'll just keep laughing this way then. But more and more in my life, I kind of like the quiet, I kind of like the sublime. And as I kind of think about that, I think we call that just adulting. That's just what maturation looks like in the life of Jesse here. But in our American culture, we oftentimes are tempted to be sold joy. I went to Vegas this past week, and it was interesting. I'd never been there before. I went with some friends. They had been there. And it's very interesting as you drive around, all of the things that you are sold or attempted to be sold as counterfeit joy. There are a lot of things that are handed to you, things that are like, hey, this thing will make your life better. You want to buy a rent a really fancy car to drive around and look cool? I'm like, no, not really. That seems expensive. But I think for just us as Americans, that we need to begin to rediscover where joy comes from. And as I kind of have gone through this kind of journey thus far, I kind of discovered that it's a lot closer to myself, and that it's also in some of the smaller things in life. So let's see if I could do the slideshow correctly here. I had some trouble the other day. Here we go. Joy. I always like to start off with the definition, because that way we all start on the same playing field. We all know what we're talking about when we talk about joy. And joy, according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, is a state of happiness or felicity. Now, for some of you out there, you're going to be like, Felicity? Isn't that the 90s show about this lady who does like stuff? And I go, yes, you're absolutely right. But it also is it's also described as an intense happiness. All right. Also, joy is a source of delight. Doesn't that sound good? Like enjoying like a really fine wine or a delicious meal or something like that. Thirdly, by the prospect of possessing what one desires. Again, this is more than just like wanting things, although it can be that. But when was the last time that you really looked forward to something? Something in the future. When was the last time you really looked forward to something? Philosophers throughout the ages would say that we don't actually desire the thing. We actually don't desire the actual object itself. We actually, deep down in our souls, desire to desire. We desire the desire. Now, for some of you out there, I'm going to use a word that might not be super familiar, but let's see here. The Enneagram. Some people are like nodding their heads. So this idea of desiring the desire is exemplified in the number 7, which those who are 7s, raise your hand. Got a 1, a 2. I got like a 7 wing. And again, this is all foreign to you. No problem. We're going to go over this in the next couple months. But again, the 7 in this particular personality typing is always looking for the next experience. Again, I got a little bit of that. So when I go on vacation, it's like no holds bars. I'm going and experiencing every single thing. But in our own life, when we think back, when was the last time that we kind of felt happiness or this kind of sense of felicity? When was the last time that something gave us delight? And when was the last time you looked forward to something really exciting? And I think for some of us, those memories just come flooding in. We can think about all the times we've gone on family trips, the times we've spent with friends, the time we've gone on a vacation. But for some of us, I think it's probably been a long time since we've felt any of these types of emotions. See, again, the way that I've kind of seen it played out in my life, I often look for the monumental, big Mount Everest-type events. And some of them in my own life, as I kind of was processing this, was the first time I laid eyes on my lovely wife. Oh, I know. It's not good. It was in the second story of a dingy music school, and like I had been homeschooled for a long time, so really the only girl that I'd ever like known is like my mom. So like when these girls are up there, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's girls here. I was definitely a Casanova in my day. Hey. Other monumental events was when I got married, right in this exact church, standing in this general area and having my bride walk down this exact aisle. Seeing my kids be born, just to see life come from really nothing and have it grow into whining and snotty and poopy, like basically, I don't even want to go there. Again, another one that my wife and I, these monumental events, is going to Disneyland, right? Disney. And again, a lot of times it's just getting out of town. These can be those monumental events. But again, the things that I've learned, that these monumental events in our lives, the things that we go, that we just spend tons of money and time on, these experiences are more the exception than they are the rule. Because, again, if I kept getting married, I would destroy a lot of relationships, and then I'd be broke, right? If I kept having kids, if I just, like, we're going to have 30 kids, that would suck the life force out of me. I'd have, like, and again, I'd be broke. And, of course, if I went to Disney every single week, I mean, it costs, like, somebody did, like, the math on this YouTube video. It costs, like, something like $175,000 a year to live there every day or something like that. Again, the short of it is, I'd be broke. I would have no money, I'd have no time, and really, that kind of happiness really fades away really quickly, because then I'd just be looking for that next big monumental event. So again, the way that I see it is joy has a shelf life. The way that I've seen it exampled in my life is joy is about the space and time and not about how much and how long. It's about rejoicing in those kind of like everyday moments. It's about making the ordinary, the things that we just do day in and day out, and making them divine. Miles, it was almost like a year ago, he talked about that thin space between our soul and where Jesus meets. Like, it's making that thin space, that connectedness thinner and thinner. King Solomon had some insight to the shelf life of joy. And some of the things we know about King Solomon is he had it all, if you're familiar with the story. And towards the end of his life, he kind of writes this memoir. He writes Ecclesiastes. So we're going to be in Ecclesiastes verses chapter 1, verses 2 and 11. It'll also be on the screen there. But if you're familiar with Ecclesiastes, you'll probably know that it's kind of like a downer book for the most part. You know, he kind of gets to the end of his life and is like, man, we do all these things, we experience all these things, but they're really just not meaningful. It's kind of like, who here has, like, and again, you could probably even do this now, but had a journal growing up, right? All right, journal growing up. So there are things in that journal that are probably, like, not super happy, and, you know, you really don't want people to read. But it kind of, again, Ecclesiastes kind of reads like a bad emo song. So if you're not familiar with what emo music is, it stands for emotional music. Again, imagine taking those journal entries that are really sad and then tying it together with rock and roll music, but at like half speed, right? So it's like, you know, again, it's really kind of sad, right? But again, Ecclesiastes, King Solomon writes these words for us. It says, absolute futility, says the teacher, absolute futility. Everything is futile. What does a person gain for all of his efforts that he labors at under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets, painting, it returns to the place where it rises. Gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning, turning goes the wind, and the wind returns in its cycles. All the streams flow to the sea, yet the sea is never full to the place where it streams, where the streams flow. They flow. There they flow again. All things are worrisome, more than anyone can say. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. Can anyone say about anything, look, this is new? It's already existed in the ages before us. There's no remembrance of those who came before, and those who will come after. There will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. Other than just being a big downer here, what is King Solomon trying to say? That we live in a life filled with anxiety and hardships, that we will try to search for joy, but it will always wither away. That the work that we do will only do so much for us, because the reality is life is tough. If you've been on this earth long enough, you know it is not easy to exist on this little blue planet. And according to King Solomon, it's always been tough and will continue to be tough, because it always seems like we're always surrounded by situations, we're surrounded by a bill of some kind of family drama, and it just seems like our head is just above water, and it seems like the commodity of joy becomes less and less a priority in our lives. According to Barna, when asked, how are you doing today? Back in 2013 and before, we would say, good. We're doing good. We're doing all right. But when asked today, how are you doing? Oftentimes our reply is busy. That's the most common answer. 2 out of 10 adults would say that they are lonely, and that actually might be more today, because again, this data is about 6 years old. Things like the internet, we are like the most connected culture, community, people of all time, but we are also the most loneliest of people. Barnes also had this crazy kind of paradox here. It says, generally speaking, us as Americans, we are generally more worried about the future, all right? We are unsure. We have no clue where we're going sometimes. We're really hesitant to make decisions. But this is kind of the kicker. We generally are more worried about the future, but don't care to do anything about it. We just are like, I mean, why even try to fix it? Again, other things that kind of help like keep us down, this idea of cycles, is Forbes put out a statistical analysis just about credit card debt. Again, not cars and not house payments, but just the average debt that each American holds. And this is from age 18 to 75 plus, the average American has about $7,169 worth of credit card debt. Again, housing in Manteca alone, Manteca ranks 30% higher than the national average. In Manteca alone, if you want to live comfortably, you know, you could pay your bills, you could pay all your mortgages and all those kinds of things, you need to make about $75,000 a year to live comfortably, to feel comfortable, to feel like, oh, okay, cool, I got this. But in reality, the average salary in Manteca is only $45,000. Now, I say this, again, not to just bum us out, but to say there has to be a better solution than what we already have. There has to be a key to helping alleviate some of the burden, anxiety, and stress. There has to be a key to kind of bringing joy back to our community, to our family, to our friends, to our neighbors. Barna concludes this article about joy. He says, finally, the research points to many opportunities for the Christian community, the original social network, to provide genuine responses to the needs of today's culture. The church, when functioning properly, can address the rising epidemic of loneliness, financial strain, and indebtedness, increasing concerns about morality, among many other things. And lastly, it says, faith communities must respond to the fearful realities of the future with wisdom and love. After all, Jesus teaches that we should not be anxious about tomorrow. See, we are the key to bringing joy to our community and in our lives. The church is the key to alleviating the burden and anxiety and stress. But a lot of times we can kind of see that mountain and be like, man, how do we even begin to bring that joy into our community? There is a church in Wichita, Kansas that did just that. Daniel, could you go ahead and play that video for us? I can watch that video like 1,000 times. I love that video. See, we are the key to bringing joy into our community. We are the key to alleviating that stress and the anxiety to our neighbors. We are the key to bearing the burdens of our families. Again, this church in Wichita, Kansas is something kind of crazy. Again, I should start to think, what would it look like if the church stepped in and was part of creating some kind of affordable housing solution, right? What if we were to be re-engaged in that conversation? I know Miles and Doug, they've been working really hard about what does it look like to do that in the city of Manteca. It takes a lot of money. It's a big number. That's totally cool. But what would it look like to, again, alleviate that burden? Because as soon as we begin to do that, we begin to bring and introduce joy back into the lives of our friends. Again, what would it look like? Here we go. What if it looked like if the church stepped in and wanted to fix downtown? What would the church look like? What would that downtown be? I don't know if you're privy to this information, but there's a few of us who kind of watched our brewery. Because downtown needs something. And there's a few of us who go and say, man, we kind of feel like we're being pulled into this direction. Again, it costs a little bit of money, but no big deal. The reality is, money isn't even the issue. Joy and seeing our neighbors experience joy is the key, which means we have to, as an individual people, as a church, work through our own fear and insecurities to begin to help our community. We first need to be able to find joy in ourselves first. We're going to go to Philippians chapter 4 if you want to go ahead and turn to that. It'll also be on the screen here. And Paul gives us some pretty good insights to this idea of finding joy in our individual lives. Philippians 4 says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your graciousness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, through prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your heart and your minds in Jesus Christ." Again, this word rejoice, not only does it happen twice, is a lot of times translated into joy. We are to rejoice exceedingly. We are to be well. We are to thrive. We are to be glad. It also says to let your graciousness be known to anyone. Graciousness, again, this is kind of a neat little word here. We are to be known by a gentle spirit, by a sense of calm, by a sense of being fair, by a sense of being mild. Again, for ourselves, what are we known for? What are we known for? When people say, when people look at me, do they go and say, man, Jesse is known for being somebody who rejoices, or is he somebody that is always cynical? Again, another piece of this, and the peace of God that surpasses all understanding. Again, this is an idea of this tranquil state of the soul assured in the salvation through Christ. Again, this is a key part to joy here, folks. It's tough to experience true, authentic joy without Jesus. It's really tough. It also means to be content with our earthly lot. Again, we all desire this idea of peace, this idea of shalom. Our soul craves it. This is kind of like the true identity of what kingdom joy looks like. We need the peace in our lives. We need contentment. We need to find the joy. And Paul continues on in this letter and gives us some real practical ways. He says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's anything moral excellence, if there's anything praiseworthy, dwell on these things. Do what you have learned and receive and heard from me and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you." So we need to seek out and discover the truth, honor, just, purity, things that are lovely, things that are commendable, things that are morally excellent and praiseworthy. And again, it's really interesting, this idea of praiseworthy. It talks about this idea of looking at the people that are in your life and calling it out, the good things that they're doing. See, a lot of these are just internal. Man, I need to find things that are truthful for me. But this last one, praiseworthy, this idea of finding joy is like, man, we need to find joy in celebrating others. Again, these things this list of things aren't things we really can't buy. We really can't buy truth. We really can't buy honor in any of these things. The only way is to discover them through the work that we do with Jesus and to kind of push past that cynic. And how is this done? It's not done accidentally. It has to be active and it has to be intentional. For me, we did a sermon series like 20 weeks about the spiritual disciplines back last year. If you weren't here for that, I really encourage you to go through that. That goes through a lot of practical ways about how to make some spiritual disciplines in your life. But again, these practices, these things that we find in our lives are very simple. We had a friend, Joe Antis, come out and talk about songwriting. Maybe you could find joy in writing songs. The simple things. Maybe you can find joy in like writing poetry. And you're like, man, I've never tried writing that before. I don't even know where to begin. But I know that my life and my soul desires something more and deeper than what I'm currently experiencing. I talked a little bit about journaling before. Maybe you love to journal and that's the way that you connect to our Savior. Maybe it's reading. Maybe it's reading something that you're like, man, I've never thought I could read anything like this. I didn't think I could be smart enough to read a book like this, but I'm going to engage in a book in content that really stretches my soul. For me, I love taking yoga. It's one of my like number one top things that I love to do for everything. Because for me, that practice is both difficult and also contemplative. I push myself to the limit, but then I also get a chance to sit still. We just did a hike just a couple weeks ago. Again, that for me brings joy. That for me refills my tank. I go, oh man, the fresh air, the almost silence of not breathing hard and stuff like that. But hiking, getting out into nature. It could even be talking with a friend who really gets you. Again, this goes back to this loneliness thing. We are people that are disconnected from each other, even though we're the most connected. And to find a person in your life who you could talk to, who really gets you, warts and all of the good and the bad, that can bring joy to your life. It could be going on a walk and looking at the trees, hearing the birds and smelling the grass, and just enjoying a meal with friends. It's about taking the everyday things and making them divine. Again, a key to this is we have to be very, very intentional about these acts, about these practices. Because if we don't put them in our schedule, if we don't jot them in there, like King Solomon said, life is going to move fast, very fast. And then we're going to look back and we're going to wish that, man, I wish it would have just slowed down just a little bit. I'm somebody who doesn't like to live with regret. I usually like the decision that I make, and I'm okay with it. Like, that's kind of just built into my personality. But again, myself, I have to be able to slow down and be, all right, where's Jesus talking to me at? Where do I need to go? Where is he leading? Because when we find joy, it trickles down to our marriages. It trickles down to my relationship with my kids. It trickles down to my relationships with my friends. Then it trickles down to my community. Again, if my marriage, if I was to look at the lens of truth and honor and just, if I was to praise my wife, if I could find that in myself and do that with my wife and my kids, man, how would that change my relationship with my wife and my kids? Then if I was to like spill that out over to our friends, if I was to do all these things with my friends, man, how would that change my relationship with them? How would that bring joy to that relationship? And again, we got a whole bunch of people that surround this church building that we have no clue who they are. No clue. And I'll be the first to say we've been horrible neighbors for the last 20 years. We haven't been the greatest neighbors, but we're changing that. We're going to be able to bring joy, the joy that we find in ourselves, to the people we have no clue who we are, that we even exist, that the doors are open in this place. We become people who are characterized by joy and not the cynic. We become the joy that other people need. We become the church that gives joy freely. We become the people who see the everyday monotony and turn it into the divine. And again, Jesus was really, really on point with taking the ordinary and making it divine. He says this in Matthew 26. I'm going to read it here. As they were eating, Jesus took the bread, blessed and broke it, gave it to his disciples and said, "Take it and eat it. This is my body." Then he took the cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them and said, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. And so today, we're going to be taking communion. Again, this was a very common practice that Jesus and his buddies would do regularly. Again, it's about taking the ordinary and making it even more special, making it divine, connecting it with heaven. Jesus knew that the space and time that we occupy is holy, that it's the thing that connects us to our Creator. So today as we take communion, again, I'm going to pray for us today. And as we pray today, our prayer intention is going to be that we pray that we would seek truth, honor, justice, purity, things that are lovely, commendable, things that are morally excellent and praiseworthy in our everyday life. Again, that's my prayer for myself, for my family, for us today, that when we walk out of these doors, that we begin to see all the actions that we take in this particular capacity, that we begin to see our relationships with those particular characteristics. And again, another prayer that we're going to pray is pray to release that inner cynic. Again, I don't want to listen to Shane and Shane music for like 2 weeks, but I know that it's going to be good for me, and I should probably, you know, let that go. But pray to release that inner cynic. And lastly, that we would be a people characterized by joy, that when we go out of here, when we leave this room, when we go and interact with everybody, that we'd be people who are characterized by the joy that only comes by knowing Jesus. So what we're going to do, if you've never done communion with us before, we do intinction. So after I pray, you can kind of sit and reflect, take all the time that you want, and you can take a little bit of the bread, dunk it into the little grape juice there, and you can take it back to your seat or take it anywhere up here. If you need prayer, I'm here. Miles is here. There's a bunch of people who'd love to pray with you. We would love to process anything and just be a good friend to you. So at this time, let's go ahead and pray. So Jesus, we live in a world that is fast and complex and is just tough. There are situations that are outside of our control. But you give us the spirit and determination. You give us the relationship to tackle all of it. So Lord, I pray that as we take communion today, that you would just remind us to slow down. That you would remind us to see the things that we pass by every day, that we would see the people in our lives differently, that we would be able to find that joy that comes from only knowing you and taking the time to discover, that joy would then spill out to our relationships, to our community, and to our neighbors. Lord, I pray for that inner cynic in some of us, Lord, that we would release that, the thing that holds us back, that drags us down from connecting with you. I just pray, Lord, that just right now, that if there's anything like that in our lives, that we would just be released from that. And Lord, that when we leave here today, that we'd be characterized by you, by joy. So when people see us, they can't help but say, man, I need to get closer to that. And we would just point them right back to you. So again, Jesus, I just thank you for this time. I thank you for all these folks here. I thank you for our community that we're going to continue to impact and be engaged with. I just thank you for all the opportunities that you bring across our plate, Lord, that it's an honor to do so. And we just pray this in your name. Amen.